Welcome to the Chain Stories Podcast, the podcast that celebrates disruptors who defy convention. Here, we dive into the bold stories of trailblazers who turned audacious ideas into billion-dollar ventures. From digital assets to transformative innovations, brought to you by Dropout Capital, we believe the path to success isn't always conventional. So whether you're a student, a founder, or just curious, these are the stories of fearless innovators redefining what's possible.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have today in our podcast, Chris Buren. Chris was a long time part of the Blockchain Education Network. He was a student at Rutgers. He was the club lead. He organized some of the most engaging events I ever saw on campus. And since very early days, Chris was at every conference in the digital asset space. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. It's pretty rainy in Hong Kong. We just had a typhoon, but besides that, I think it's pretty okay. How are you?
Awesome. I'm doing great. Out here in Europe, enjoying the winter. Couldn't get any better.
There you go.
Anyways, last time we catched up, you were still in college and not sure if you dropped out or what you end up doing, but I've heard that you worked at a pretty cool firm in crypto. So I'm sure you did not drop out from university. Was that a thought in your mind at a certain point?
No, I'm a pretty straight shooter kind of guy. I always wanted to graduate. Like you said, I graduated from Rutgers. I'm fourth generation Rutgers. So my great-grandfather, and dad all went. So if I didn't go, then I think there'd be some problems in the family. I had to check that off the list, but didn't really drop out. I think I played my cards pretty well when I was in college, taking advantage of being a student. People are a lot more receptive to helping you.
And while you were there, what are you studying and how did you come wrapped around in this world of crypto? And it's such a weird industry. And even early days, you probably felt that it was such a niche. And how did all this unravel in your life? To today, you're working at one of the largest companies in space.
So I'm at Galaxy now, their Hong Kong office. If you throw it all the way back to 2017, Bitcoin was on its way up to 20K for the first time. And then subsequently, we had a year or two long bear market. And that was my freshman year at Rutgers, which is the State University of New Jersey. And Bitcoin and crypto was the talk of the town, right? Everyone's trying to get into it. It was just like a new hot gambling type of thing for college students. There was a lot of interest because you're seeing like people making 2 and 3 X's at that. It was absolutely crazy. Some friends and I got into it and obviously we played the markets a little bit, made some money, lost some money, but not enough to drop out, unfortunately. So we were still there. But yeah, we realized that, hey, crypto was like a really cool space. Like we want to work here in the future. So what's the best way to do that? Talking to companies, we realized, we said to ourselves, hey, what better way to pitch ourselves to companies and to get out into the space than by starting an actual club, getting funding from our university, inviting these actual companies that we wanted to work at while we were at school to come to us, to come to our university and actually speak, because we're almost like 45 minutes from New York. So it's pretty close for some of their offices. So that's what we did. We started the club.
Start a club on campus? Because I remember at Florida, we had to convince them we're not dealing with drugs. Because that would be reputation in 2016.
Really?
Did you register it?
We didn't have any trouble. Rutgers is such a large place. There's like 70,000 something students, hundreds of clubs that as long as you make it seem like this is for educational purposes, which it was, and to help students learn and get jobs. And we were pretty good with it. I wish I had stories about trying to convince boomers that we're not going to buy drugs with Bitcoin on Silk Road or whatever, but everyone was pretty chill.
Then the club picked up momentum. You had interviewed some interesting speakers, and I guess you start getting exposure to the space and this industry, and your network starts increasing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We heard that Ben at the time was really helping students to go to different conferences, connect them with speakers, and run certain events. So we said, this is like a no-brainer. Let's hit up Eric Pinos, who was the head of Ben at the time, the original Go Ben. So that kind of broadened our horizons from just within Rutgers, bringing speakers out that people were interested in, to actually going to conferences, meeting other students at other schools. Like that's how I met you and Kate and Eric and the whole rest of the crew. and going to conferences, hackathons, doing the whole circuit and everything. And I think that was the point at which I was like, okay, leveraging yourself while you're still a student is honestly probably like 10 times easier to make your way in crypto than if you were to graduate and then try to do it. Because there's a lot more opportunities.
Is that how you, part of how you found your job at Galax was through attending an event in crypto?
100%, yeah. And you were there. I think it was MaidenNet 2022, I want to say. 2021 or 2022 in New York. You, Eric Pinos, myself, and maybe a couple other Ben heads were there. And it turned out the company I'm at now, Galaxy, actually had a booth there. And Ben was gracious enough to sponsor our tickets and to sponsor an Airbnb. And the last day of the conference, I noticed that Galaxy had a booth there. And Mike Novogratz, our CEO, was actually speaking. And so I walked up to the booth and said, hey, listen, I'm Chris. I'm studying quant finance at Rutgers. Yeah, really interested in crypto. I've been in the space for several years. And what do you guys look for when you're looking at candidates? And that was how I made my way in. The person that was at the booth actually said, Galaxy is like a crypto and TradFi company at the same time. The crypto isn't taught at schools, right? The way that you can instinctively know crypto is if you're crypto native or if you do a lot of studying, a lot of learning on your own time. So all of the crypto expertise they had at the company and they still have at the company is from very young people, people that kind of grew up with it, like myself, since 2017. So he said, just by virtue of being at a conference and showing that you're crypto native like that, give me your resume, put you at the top of the pile. So that wound up getting rolled into an internship at Galaxy. And the following semester, graduated and then a full-time offer. 2 years later, I'm in Hong Kong, moved from New York. I think it worked out pretty well, thanks to Ben and thanks to all the other fantastic people I met along the way.
Cool. And going to this summer internship and your first steps in the industry, what is it like, or what, for the people listening, what is it to be a quant? What is your day-to-day operations? What do you do in terms of trading perps? What is even a perp? Can you do a brief overview of what essentially is your day-to-day job or what you've experienced so far?
Sure. So for starters, I'm sure if anyone's traded crypto, they know what perps are. But for those who haven't lost too much money yet, I'm about to introduce you to something that you'll probably lose more money in. So perps, perpetual swaps, are basically just a very easy way to get exposure to any kind of crypto asset. Usually they're more liquid than the actual tokens of the underlying, so they're very popular. And I think the main reason people use them is because you can get very easy and large amounts of leverage on it, up to 50 or 100x on some exchanges, I think, probably even more. But basically, yeah, it's just a synthetic derivative of any kind of token that's out there that's cheaper to trade, faster to trade, and easier to get leverage on. People tend to go more towards perps when they're trying to express short-term views on the market or flip shit coins, anything like that, rather than going to spot. So I'm on the electronic trading desk here at Galaxy, and we have many different mandates, right? One of the main ones that we have is to make sure that all of the algos that we have that help facilitate client flow work. So we have clients, right? That could be hedge funds, could be family offices, could be prop shops, could be anyone, any institutional player that wants to trade crypto. And we have a high touch desk, which is basically you call up one of our traders or you go in a Telegram group and you say, and buy this much Bitcoin, but then we also have an API, and our team manages that API flow. So we have many different algorithms that run to help institutional clients get exposure to different cryptos much faster than you would versus if you were calling up someone or using a Telegram group. And we just have to make sure that those algos are running, right? Making sure that clients are being quoted correctly, make sure spreads are correct, make sure that the hedging on the different venues that we use is running correctly, making sure that any kind of settlement that needs to be done with clients that trade via the API is completed. And that's a high level of it. There's a lot more nuance to it, but that's one of the main jobs that we do on the desk. The other jobs, which I think is very interesting, is called market making as a service. So basically new protocols or new coins that kind of pop up overnight, or maybe older ones that are less liquid, come to us and say, hey, Galaxy, we'd like to make you a deal. We'll loan you this amount of tokens from our treasury, because usually these tokens have a pretty sizable treasury. And if you make markets on exchange and make our token more liquid, we'll either pay you a certain fee or we'll write you an option on the tokens that we loan you. There's a lot of different models to it, but basically it's a protocol saying we want more liquidity for our token. We'll loan Galaxy the tokens, and Galaxy will use those tokens to make the markets for that token more liquid on several different exchanges. And that's, again, all algorithms, right? Making sure that your spreads are correct, making sure that the market rips one way, we're not caught offsides with a large delta or a large exposure. Try to keep things pretty risk-adjusted and risk-averse. We also have a small prop allocation, so running different kinds of quantitative strategies on crypto, very algorithmic and signal-based. But for now, yeah, the first two is generally the day-to-day. It's a 24-hour desk, right? Because crypto trades 24 hours, for better or worse. We have different members of our teams in each office that help oversee these algorithms. So we all have different shifts. Mine is actually in about 9 hours, which is nice. So we have the next 9 hours to talk about crypto. Was that a good explanation?
Yeah, I think it was a good explanation. And something interesting that you mentioned was family office individuals come to you guys. Do they come to the perps desk and they want to trade those to increase their return for family LPs or so on? Or what is the main demand that you see? Just OTC, white glove servicing?
So we don't do anything with perps, right? So perps are offered by exchanges. We do things with spot for our clients. I think it's very interesting. You see types of clients that are very big, recognizable brand names that offer crypto services to their own users, like consumer-facing companies. You have hedge funds that maybe they're more traditionally TradFi assets, macro assets, and now they want to go into crypto, but they don't want to have to worry about custody. They don't want to have to worry about trying to figure out to set up their account on Coinbase or on Binance or anything like that. So going to an intermediary like Galaxy is just the easiest and cheapest option for them. Same thing with family offices, prop shops. It's very interesting. This is less on the electronic side, but we see people that just bought Bitcoin in like 2010, 2011, and they just sat on it and want to monetize it, right? So maybe they lend it back to us and then we pay them a little bit of yield on it. Or maybe they want to sell it through us. Maybe they want to write options, overwrite options on it. But you see a lot of different types of clients that come through. Obviously, since the advent of the whole Bitcoin ETF, a lot more advisors and more traditional institutional type players have wanted to get exposure to this. So that's a trend that I think we're going in, right?
So you probably have seen through the trading desk recently a lot of momentum, a lot of new inflow. And I think it's actually interesting because you mentioned people from 2010. I follow an account that tracks dormant addresses and I see a lot of them popping up that they just transfer to an exchange, like 5,000 Bitcoin, an address that didn't move in 10 years. And that must be fascinating to deal with some of those individuals in the day-to-day basis.
Yeah, think about it. These are people that many of them actually aren't even like crypto native, right? Just regular people that, you know, maybe were geeky or nerdy 15 years ago when the whole internet was popping up and things were still spicy and unregulated. They bought a little Bitcoin and then either they forgot about it or they just sat on it. And then you see, oh, Bitcoin hits new all-time highs, right? 73K, 80K, 90K. And I think that people start to wonder, they see Bitcoin news and they say, I think I have some Bitcoin. I wonder what it's worth right now. Hopefully they didn't throw their computer out, right? With all their keys on it 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but we just see a lot of those kinds of people, which I think is pretty cool.
And why would they go to Galaxy instead of going to the Coinbases of the world? Is it a trust? Is the unique white glove service that you guys provide?
Yeah, I think so. It's a trust. It's cheap. It's safer. Basically, think about it. Let's say you woke up and you had found yourself having $100 million worth of Bitcoin, right? And say you weren't crypto native. You weren't used to, you know, all the lingo behind, oh, what are my private keys? Is this like a hot wallet or a cold wallet? Is this safe? Is this not? And figuring out how to set up your account on Coinbase, trusting yourself that you're going to move, whether it's in one shot, hopefully not, or in chunks, $100 million worth of Bitcoin over to an exchange. Okay, you want to liquidate it, you want to sell it. Do I sell all of it at once? No, because if you do that, you're going to rip through the order book and it's just going to be a very expensive trade for you to put on. And it's just a very unnerving experience to do that kind of thing when we're not used to crypto or trading that size at all. So people come to Galaxy because, like you said, it's a lot easier, right? People that know how to systematically deal with large size, whether it's buying or selling, And in a lot of ways, it's just the easiest and cheapest thing to do. So I think that's why a lot of people come to institutional shops like this.
Yeah, for sure. And are you very much focused in your day-to-day in working with perps, or that's just a side of the business that you maintain focus on?
Yeah, definitely. Anywhere there's liquidity, there's going to be people that need access to liquidity, right? Clients obviously can only buy or sell spot through us. But when it comes to hedging that out, we don't have any kind of large exposure. The opposite side of that trade, basically, if a buyer sells to us, then we're automatically long, right? It's net zero, right? There's two sides of a trade. So we have to make sure we're protected and we don't have any outsized exposure if the market rips up one way or up or down. So yeah, perps are a pretty important part of the job in terms of hedging and making sure that we're running a very riskless and, or as minimize risk as much as possible, I should say, and a responsible business. So a lot of work in perps, I'd say.
Is that your favorite part of your job, or is there something specific
perps? I'm a nerdy guy, right? I studied quant finance in school. I think just seeing how businesses run is really cool. It's very easy enough to say, oh yeah, service client flow and algorithms and stuff like that. But when you get down to it, there's a lot of nitty gritty, a lot of overlapping circles between, okay, regular market and finance, and how do you reconcile that with what you do? And then you have the whole tech side of it, right? And then you have models, mathematical and statistical models that you have to run it and adjust and change parameters time to make sure that your algorithms run correctly. Then you have the implementation of that, which is the actual code that you do, right? Which is a lot of times in C or Java, some stuff in Python that doesn't have to be super high performance. Then you have the whole crypto side of it. Something's happening in the market and what's going on can give you a little foresight about the best way to proceed forward. So just seeing all these multidisciplinary areas that overlap in a lot of different ways, I think is very interesting. Because if you go to a TradFi shop, maybe you deal with markets, definitely. And maybe if you're just like a back office quant, markets and math and stats. Or maybe if you're a trader, you just deal with markets if you're not a quant. But being in crypto forces you to be jack of all trades. Jack of all trades, but you can't be master of none. You have to be master of probably most things, or at least one or two things. So I think that's maybe the most exciting part about it, wearing a lot of different hats.
Cool. And for people listening, and they're probably thinking about, I should trade crypto. Do you even recommend them to trade day to day, or should they just buy and hold? Because I get this question a lot, even from my family. What coin should I buy? And usually I tell them, you should just buy X amount that you're comfortable with every month for 5 years. What is your take on this?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person, right? They just want to have fun and they want to gamble. Buy shitcoins, right? Buy meme coins within your bounds, within your monetary limits, obviously. Don't do anything irresponsible. If your purpose of going into crypto and trading is to just have fun and gamble, what's the difference between buying a random meme coin versus going on to one of the sports betting apps and doing like an 8-leg parlay, right? Nothing. Most likely, you're probably going to lose money. Probably have a better shot at making it on the meme coin actually than doing an 8-leg parlay. But if your purpose is to build wealth, like you said, maybe go more in majors like crypto, Bitcoin or ETH or SOL kind of thing, which again, isn't a recommendation. But if your goal is to make money, maybe stay away from it, right? Short-term gains and everything, that's a little bit tougher. But I think it just depends on each person's risk profile, what their goal is at the end of the day. But I think the overriding lesson that people can take from this is that do things within your fiscal limit. Don't do things irresponsibly and don't trade more than you should, obviously.
Well, from your point of view, what's the biggest upside in trading perps or venturing through that world?
It's double-edged sword, right? So you can get much more liquidity. So if you do want to trade larger size, you're not going to push the market as much and get a very disadvantageous price. Most likely, if you're just a retail guy like us, then like the two of us, the people listening to this, probably not going to eat through the order book or push the market in a certain way that's advantageous to you, because our size is so small compared to everything else. But perps, if you want to lever up and you want to say, hey, listen, I really think Bitcoin is going to hit 100K this week, and take a little bit of leverage. Instead of buying $2,000 worth of Bitcoin, I can buy $20,000 on 10X leverage, right? With the caveat of that being, okay, we use 10X leverage. If Bitcoin goes down 10%, I lose all my money. I'm out. So
in fact, I leveraged that 10x. Am I down also 10x more to enough to pay back?
Of course. Yeah. But you don't have to pay anything back because most of these exchanges are have all liquidation features, right? In most situations, I say put your Tether or USDC or something on the exchange and you can trade perps with it. If Bitcoin rips in the opposite way you think it is, very realistic possibility of losing all of the cash that you put up against that position, all the collateral. So you have to be responsible.
Do you see perps markets having a very big impact in the actual price of Bitcoin in the market? Is this actually a metric that we should look into, the influx of perps that's coming in, either they're shorting or longing? Do you think it has an impact in the actual price?
Oh, absolutely. There is a very interesting dynamic between perp versus spot, right? We hear it all the time on the desk. It's just a perp move or a spot lending. Bitcoin's going higher, right? We're up 1.5%. Could break 94K. Is this a perp-led move or a spot-led move? Is someone buying spot to help push us to that new price or someone buying perps? Bitcoin perps pushes to that new price. The difference between the two being that if you're buying spot, you can't get nearly as much leverage as you can with perps versus if you're using perps, there's just more and more leverage going into the system. Because if you're using perps, you're using some kind of leverage, right? With that said, let's say the perp-led move, Bitcoin breaks 94K, people still keep buying, rip through 95K, 96K. Now, let's just say you sell around 95, 96K, there's a tremendous amount of leverage in the market, right? Which means if Bitcoin maybe goes down 2 or 3%, there's going to be a lot more liquidations that happen on exchanges, many exchanges. And basically, when your positions are liquidated, that's just the exchange selling into the market. So you can go on a site like CoinGlass, click liquidation at the top, and you can see, okay, Bitcoin has a run up. People are buying on perp. More OI is being added to the system, to the market, more leverage going in. And if Bitcoin moves against them, they're liquidated. And that's when you can see this avalanche effect where one liquidation causes more people to get liquidated, and the price just drops through the ground, which is not good. There you go, glass. So if you click liquidation, just the top is probably fine. There you go. So 1 hour rect is pretty nice, right? The amount of people that were long on perps that got liquidated, so $8.5 million worth of long perp positions just got automatically closed out just because price moved against them. Same thing with shorts in the other time frames, 4, 12, and 24 hours. So basically, if Bitcoin has a very large run up and maybe it traces back a couple percent, you're going to see those long liquidations just absolutely skyrocket. Because people see momentum in the market. They think Bitcoin is going to go up forever. They buy on perp. And if the price moves against them, they get liquidated.
So probably in the peak of a bull market, when everyone gets emotional, we come back here to this webpage and we see on long, multi-million dollar long, and short is probably very small. And out of nowhere, you come here in a day or two and everything turns red and shorts are way more than. And that's probably indicates the start of a bear market. Have you seen a pattern?
Or bear market, but honestly, I think bear market is more longer term, right? Bitcoin is down 10, 20% over the course of maybe a few months. And there's a very clear feel and trend in the market. Okay, there's not really any kind of catalyst or any kind of narrative going on. We're just grinding down. There's no reason Bitcoin should go up. So Bitcoin doesn't go up. I would categorize that as a bear market. But just because you have one or several days of large liquidations, Bitcoin is down 10%. I wouldn't call that a bear market. That's just like a correction. Bitcoin's overbought. Someone sees the market as being over leveraged. So they sell a bunch of Bitcoin to just push the market into people that were using leverage and get them liquidated.
For example, these $304.28 million in liquidations, was these people trying to short Bitcoin or Ripple or in general?
Looks like it's both, right? So if you look at 24-hour rect, it looks like $130 or million worth of longs and $170 million worth of shorts were liquidated. So that means there's probably a fair amount of volatility in the market and people just got caught on the wrong side. So I think over the last 24 hours, Bitcoin is up, right?
Yes, 91K. It went down to 89 and 88 and came back up.
Yep. So this is the perfect example, right? Bitcoin went up basically one direction in the last 24 hours and it stayed kind of range bound. And so you see the amount of shorts that were liquidated is greater than the amount of longs that were liquidated. Basically, market moves one way. People that were short took out a lot of leverage, started to lose money, lose more money until all the collateral that they had for a certain perp position was wiped out. The exchange went and they said, okay, we took all your collateral out. None left, you're liquidated. So they took the amount of Bitcoin that that person bought on leverage and just sell it. So if the market moves up like you saw, the number of shorts that get liquidated is going to be much larger than longs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And it was actually something I was not aware as a way to predict where the market is going or sort of get an overall sentiment. I actually think these metrics can really tell us a lot. And even here, we can see on each exchange how much in terms of liquidations and long or short is going on. And I do like this chart too. Also helps us visualize what's going on in the market in a long time frame. I wonder how this is in the bear market actually, because this only shows about a year. Is there any other tools that you recommend like this?
Honestly, if any kind of people or mainly students, I would say, that are interested in crypto, want to learn more, or for anyone basically, going through a site like CoinGlass has a lot of good data that it's basically free data, right? You can get it from the exchanges. It's just like the barrier to entry, knowing how to pull data from an API, which you're going to have to do it with code, and knowing how to aggregate certain things, how to calculate certain things. Sites like CoinGlass basically do it for you, which is much easier. So this is a tool I like to use a lot. Let me see if there's anything else that would be cool. VELO, Velo.xyz is also a good site. Coinalyze is also good. TradingView is good for just seeing charts and plotting things out.
I guess there's a lot out there that someone entering the space can go in and learn and see. And I think an advantage that any student has that we did not have in our time, I feel like a boomer saying this, but it's ChatGPT, like truly leveraging and using that to educate you on the markets and using these tools can really speed up the process.
Oh, 100%. Just using ChatGPT to have a conversation like, oh, what is a perpetual swap in crypto? Okay. What is a funding rate? How does it affect the price of a perp? I think ChatGPT is a very useful tool, obviously, but just having conversations with it is probably the main strength I like to use it for.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Great. Yeah. And now going more into a macro level, I know you started your career in New York, and New York is the global financial capital of the world, or used to be for a while. What happened that there seems to be a trend, and I keep seeing this even with myself, everyone left the US. You were right now in Hong Kong. Have you found that capital markets there have more flow, more opportunity career-wise? What is your point of view in that?
I think you're right. New York is still definitely the capital, right? It's going to be pretty tough for any single city to beat that, I think. But at the same time, if you talk about it from a crypto sense, the US up until we just had the election a week or two ago, and Trump is going to be in. He's shown himself to be a very pro-crypto guy. And hopefully now, once he's in office, the crypto ice is going to start to melt a little bit in the US. The Bitcoin ETF was one big thing, right? But I think hopefully you're going to see a lot more friendliness towards crypto regulation, hopefully going forward.
You can't trade perps in the US, right?
No, not without a VPN, which is, I think, still technically illegal. But yeah, can't trade perps, which is why in Hong Kong or London, you're also allowed to as well. But that's one of the big barriers to our team, at least. We don't have anyone in New York because you can't trade perps in New York.
And is it because the way how the SEC see perps, or specifically how they regulate perps for digital assets and the other industries you can trade perps in, traditional finance or equities?
Perpetual swaps do exist in other industries. It's just that it's most popular in crypto. So it's about this whole idea of a future without a maturity date that gets the SEC all riled up.
You think the SEC took this approach to regulation because in crypto, you can't censor it like a traditional company where you could go and shut down operations here. You have all these protocols and you have a 24/7 market that they felt, okay, this is out of our control, out of our reach. So we need to just regulate by enforcement, but also you're not allowed to do this in the United States mainland.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a part of it. Just having a feeling that you have these kinds of financial applications that people can use that kind of mirror some of what's happening in TradFi in the US and in other markets. And basically, they don't sit within the purview currently of certain regulatory agencies. And even if the regulatory agencies do say, hey, listen, if you want to offer your services to US customers, you have to adhere to our rules. There's not even a good way many times for these agencies to enforce those laws, right? Because if you have an on-chain DEX, for example, that has a team of fully remote people based all over the world, and anyone can access it as long as they have a wallet and internet connection, then why would they want to hire lawyers and go through all this regulatory process to get some random license they probably don't know anything about? To officially follow rules of the U.S. to offer their services to U.S. people, right? If U.S. citizens really want to use those applications, we would just get a VPN, which if you're crypto savvy enough, everyone can get a subscription to.
Do you think at the end of the day, with all these regulations in place, is there one positive thing that we can say, okay, this protects the American people from using bad services or losing their dollars? Is there one positive thing we can say, or are we now as Americans deprived from having access to some of the most innovative financial products ever created in human history?
I think yes to your question. It's both sides, right? It's a matter of opinion for each person. Like my personal opinion is that, yeah, people should be allowed to take whatever risk they want to. Having a very large regulatory agency, people in suits basically tell you, hey, we know better than you. You shouldn't be able to trade this because it's too dangerous for you and we don't want you getting exposed to it. I think it's a little demeaning. But at the same time, people that maybe would have tried to yeet money into a lot of these protocols and very risky financial products definitely would have lost a lot of money because a lot of people aren't responsible, not as responsible as us maybe. So yeah, you can see the spirit in which they're doing these kinds of things. But personally, I really agree with it. And hopefully with the new administration coming in, we'll see a little more warmth toward this area.
And do you think that also impacts where you're stationed for the next upcoming years? Do you see America now potentially being the land of opportunity for someone that just entered a career in finance?
Yeah, if you're entering finance, I'd say New York is 100%, right? At the same time, I think, maybe I mentioned this a little bit earlier, that for your long-term career, having experienced different international environments and markets and actually moving and working there, whether it's the UK, London, or maybe somewhere in Asia, Japan or Singapore or Hong Kong, where I am, can do a lot of good for your career. Almost everyone that I've talked to out in Hong Kong and in New York, a lot of top level people did do stints in other countries, mainly London and Hong Kong, just because they're several decades older than me. And those were the traditional financial hubs back then, as they still are now. But yeah, it's just pattern recognition. A lot of people in very high level positions today got their start in one city and kind of accelerated their career in a different city. And then obviously I think like them and myself, I'll probably go back to New York. I have a house in Hoboken, so got to get back to that eventually. But yeah, while I'm out here, I learn a lot, do a lot of good for your career and gives you, I think, a very good perspective of how things are done outside of the American bubble.
You also see Dubai and Singapore is already global up, but you see these becoming global ups in terms of capital markets, or Hong Kong, London, and New York will maintain that position?
I think yes to both questions, right? I think those three will still be the gateways to each of their markets. Brexit didn't really help. A lot of companies moved out of London because of that. Hong Kong has their own issues as well. So a lot of companies are moving to Singapore, but a lot of traditional companies are still here, right? They have their bases set up here. There's still a lot of capital in each of these cities, and it's expensive to move capital, right? It's difficult to uproot huge operations and traditional footprints of companies from one city to another. You've seen some smaller ones do it. I don't think you've seen companies just pick up their operations and move 100% of them out. It's more so they're starting to diversify their footprint and where they have buildings and people in terms of other countries. So I think for my benefit, at least, Hong Kong will stay pretty relevant in the coming years. We'll see. It all just depends on where the money flows.
Cool. Makes sense. And now one last question before we end this podcast. If we have a time traveler machine and we'll go back and you have the chance to speak to your freshman version at Rutgers, what would you tell him?
Oh, wow. Maybe don't go out on Thursdays and Sunday nights. Maybe stay in and study a little bit more. But no, I'd probably tell them, enjoy your college experience while you're still in it. I think it's a very unique time. If you do go to college, I think it's a very unique time in your life. Even though a lot of people in crypto do like to drop out, start their own projects, raise VC money and go crazy with that shit, I still think that for the vast majority of people that want to go into crypto, a lot of stuff you can do while you're still in college, right? Almost everything in crypto is remote. So basically, your geographic location isn't an issue with your class load versus what you have to do for, say, an internship or a company that you want to work at in crypto. Balancing those two might be pretty tough. But at the same time, I still think having a college degree is pretty important. And I definitely would say enjoy your college years more because you learn a lot, you create connections, right? And it's a very special time in people's lives where they're between being children and adults, right? You're still trying to find yourself, trying to find what you're interested in. And if in your freshman year, you say, oh, I want to start a crypto protocol, I'm just going to drop out, 18-year-old, right? Do you really think an 18-year-old is going to pick the right choice of what you want to do for the next 40 years of your life, 50 years of your life? Probably not. Maybe no. Hope so. That would probably be what I would have to say.
All right, cool. That's a wrap. Thanks, Chris. It's great having you here.
Great, man. Thanks, Antonio.
Thanks for tuning in to the Chain Stories podcast, where disruptors become trailblazers. Don't forget to subscribe to hear more inspiring stories from those who are pushing boundaries in digital assets. Brought to you by Dropout Capital, where bold vision transforms into reality. Check out our social media links down below and visit us online at dropout.capital. And remember, the future belongs to those who dare to challenge the norm.